Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yudalad Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Shochet b'Shabbat u'b'Yom HaKippurim. Somebody does Shechita on Shabbat and Yom Kippur. Afo pi shemitchavev b'nafsho. Even though he is chayav mita, that means on Shabbat, if he has Eidim v'atra, he's chayav mita b'day beitin skila. If he doesn't have that, then he's chayav karet. And b'Yom HaKippurim, he's chayav karet. Shechita tok sheira. So despite the fact that he's chayav mita, he has a shechita that is kshera, which would permit one to eat whatever shechita that he did. We'll have to discuss what that means, especially in the context of Yom Kippur, where you can't eat anyway. But you have an animal now that is kasher, the shechita is kshera. The Rishonim here, the Rambam, the Perush Mishnayot, the Balei Tosafot, all ask the same question, which is, Tema, Ibn Mezid, if he's doing it intentionally, Heyach shechita to kshera. How is it possible that his shechita is kshera? He's mumar b'chalel shabbatot. He becomes a mumar for chilul shabbat, and that is asur lachol mishchitato. That's what we already saw earlier in the Masechta, back on Daf Hei, that if you're a mumar l'chol haTorah kula, then your shechita is no good. Included in that is mechalel shabbat, and we had other things like avodah zarah, other items that make you a mumar, where your shechita would be disqualified. So how could it be that the Mishnah says he's doing it intentionally, and therefore his shechita is kshera? It shouldn't be kshera just because of the fact that he's mechalel Shabbat. So that forces the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot goes on to say that we're speaking about a case of shogeg over here. And that is that despite the fact that by mezid you would have been chayav mita, if you do it b'shogeg, then shechita tok kshera. That's how the Rambam reads the Mishnah. On the other hand, many Rishonim read it as being mezid, and they have to come up with ways to explain this, including the Balei Tosafot who suggest over here, two possible answers to that, one of which is that the Mumar L'Chalel Shabbat, as we noted back on Daf Hei, is only Mumar L'Chalel Shabbat B'Farhesia, if it's done in the public realm. But one who is Mechalel Shabbat B'Tzina does not get a status of Mumar L'Chol HaTorah Kula. So it could be a case here, where he's Mechalel Shabbat B'Tzina, not B'Farhesia, and that would solve your problem. The other possibility that the Tosafot introduces over here is that a person does not become a Mumar on the first time that they do something. Mumar means that you're mufkar. You do this on a recurring basis. Naselo keheter. Something that becomes as if there is no Isser over here. Totally permissible. So that only happens if you do it on a recurring basis. It doesn't happen if you do it once. So the Balei Tosafot make a second suggestion, which is maybe this is the first time he's done it, and therefore he doesn't get the status of Mumar. The Ramban and other Rishonim disagree with that and say that if he does it intentionally, it becomes a mumar, even on the first time. And they give explanations that include when the shechita is complete versus when the chilul Shabbat happens. And that is, in order for something to be chilul Shabbat, you need melechet makshevet. You have to accomplish the goal which you set out to do. Shechita, inherently, is a mekalkel. It's something that ruins the animal. The only way that shechita is effective and is helpful and constructive in nature is if you complete the shechita properly, and it's an effective shechita, because then it removes the din of nevela, it also removes the isser of evri menachai, makes it edible at this point in time. So a shechita, only legabe Shabbat is problematic when you've completed the shechita all the way to the end. It ends when you're chayav for chilul Shabbat. So that final point where there's chilul Shabbat, the shechita is already basically done by the time you reach that point. And for that reason, it might be that shechita tok shera, because in essence, the shechita takes place before you reach the point where there's chilul Shabbat, or maybe at that moment, simultaneously at the last moment, that's when the chilul Shabbat and the shechita are completed, but the robe of the shechita is done at a time period when there's no issue of chilul Shabbat or chilul Yom HaKippurim because of the fact that in the process of shechita, that's mekalkel until you reach the other point at the end. And so therefore the process of shechita might be kshera because of that. The Ramban and other Rishonim add the fact that it has to be a melocha chashuva and a tikkun gamur. So it has to have something that is really significant in order to be deemed a mumar l'chalel Shabbat. Over here that happens at the end of the shechita, at the point where he changes it from being a davar asur to a davar shel heter. So those are different ways to deal with the issue of mezid and a mumar l'chalel Shabbat as to why here his shechita is kshera. Tosfot here asks, how does he eat the meat here? Because you can't salt it. to remove the blood from the meat that you're going to eat. Obviously, you're going to eat it raw and not cooked. So how do you get the blood out? So Tosva gives one answer that Avar v'milcha, he also violated that, and he salted it, and he was able to eat it because it was salted. The other answer he gives is that dam shebe'evarim, the dam that's absorbed in the evarim, is only problematic when it comes out of the aver. But while it's still balua in the aver, it's not a problem of dam. And since over here it's not going to be cooked, it's going to remain raw, when you eat it and the blood is absorbed internally, that's not a problem of achilat dam. And that leads Tosafot to an additional chiddush about this, which is that if you roast the meat, then you don't need to salt it, because the roasting itself doesn't cause the blood to emerge. And therefore, since it's still absorbed inside of the meat, it's not a problem of dam. And therefore, if you tend to roast meat, salting it is not an issue. And this was actually helpful back in the days when they used to bring basar kafui from South America, which was meat that was frozen when it was first shechted, and then only salted when it was defrosted and brought to Israel. There's a machloket as to whether when you salt the meat, it has to be salted within the first 72 hours. Does that mean 72 hours period? Or does that mean 72 hours biologically? And if you freeze it, you freeze the time as well, and therefore you can salt it afterwards. So the basar kafui was relying on this heter to salt it if this biological 72 hours did not elapse. But there were many who said that that was problematic in terms of this meat, and therefore there were tzudot in Yerushalayim, tzudot kashrut, that used to write basar kafui on it. The way to deal with that would be if you ate that meat after it was roasted. Because then, even if it's not salted, the roasting of the meat works in order to either remove whatever blood's in there or whatever blood remains inside is not problematic. And therefore, the solution to basar kafui was if you ate it roasted. Now, that doesn't overcome the problem that there was a separate issue with basar kafui, which is when it was sourced from South America, there were questions about the properness of the shechita. That obviously you cannot overcome, which is a secondary issue, but at least the issue of salting can be overcome by simply roasting the meat, and that comes out from the Tosafot over here, and also is what he's describing here, that if you have to eat the meat raw, and the blood is still inside the aver, that's not a problem of achilat dam. Amar Rav Huna, Dorosh Chia Barav, Rav Chia Barav says, Mishmei Derav, so in the name of his father, Asura Bachila Liyoma, that you're also to eat it for the day. So even though you were Shochet on Shabbat, Yom Kippurim, and the Shechita is an effective Shechita, nevertheless, on that day itself, you cannot eat it. Now, by Yom HaKippurim, that's obvious because of the fact that it is Yom HaKippurim. And that's what Rashi says is the diuk that Rav is making out of the Mishnah. The fact that it says Shabbat and Yom HaKippurim together, what did Yom Kippur add that you didn't have by Shabbat? Because if by Shabbat we have a Chiyuv Mita Beitin, you say the Shechita is effective, then certainly by Yom Kippur, where it's only a Chiyuv Karet, it of course will be effective. So what does the addition of Yom Kippur to the Mishnah do? So that's what Rav is midayik. The fact that Yom Kippur on that day itself, it would be a sword just because it's Yom Kippur, even if the Shechita is effective. So Rav says the addition of Yom Kippur tells you that even on Shabbat, it's a sword on Shabbat itself, even though the Shechita is effective. So that's the source for Rav's position that he is midayik out of the Mishnah. The Baal Tosafot, once again over here, discussed the issue of Rav Huna, because here Rav Huna is quoting Chiyar Barav, and on the other hand, he says, Tema d'b'chol duchte ma'ashma d'Rav Huna haya gadol mimenu. Everywhere else, we have indications that Rav Huna was greater than Chiyar Barav. And yet over here, he's quoting Chiyar Barav. Tosafot yesterday dealt with the possibility that there were two Rav Hunas. But even with the second Rav Huna, it seems that he was a Rebbe to Chiyar Barav. Even Rav Huna, the Talmid of Rav, was older than Chiyar Barav. And that's why Tosafot of Yer can't answer, oh, two Rav Hunas. It'd have to be three Rav Hunas at this point. So that's obviously not the answer. But you have to say, possibly here, it's because it's a quote from Rav himself. And even though Rav Huna is a Talmid Mufak of Rav, maybe Chiyar Barav had something from his father that Rav Huna hadn't heard. And so that's why Rav Huna is quoting Chiyar Barav, even though he might have been his Rebbe or might have been older than him. So then Gemara says, Benas bin Chavraya the Meimar, and the Bnei Yeshiva, the Bnei Beit Midrash, thought to say, Rabbi Yehuda hi, that the position that Rav is stipulating in the Mishnah is the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Now that doesn't mean that Rav paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, he's just saying our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's what the Bnei Yeshiva said. We'll see later on that maybe Rav Paskin's not like Rabbi Yehuda. But at least as far as Rav's explanation of the Mishnah, they thought it was done within the position of Rabbi Yehuda, indicating the authorship or the attribution of the Mishnah would be to Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara wants to know, hey Rabbi Yehuda, which Rabbi Yehuda are they referring to? Why do they think that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Mishnah, or the attribution of the Mishnah is to Rabbi Yehuda? And that's why Rav comes to the conclusion that's a sur for the day. Where do you get that in the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda? So I'm Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yehuda da Chonahi. It's Rabbi Yehuda of Hachono. Hachono means that things need to be prepared before Shabbat in order to be utilized on Shabbat. There are different views as to what exactly Hachono is. Many view Hachono just as another form of Muksa. Muksa means that things that you intend to use for Shabbat, you have in mind to use for Shabbat, you're allowed to use on Shabbat. Things that you don't have in mind to use on Shabbat, or for whatever other reason they are outside of your purview on Shabbat, then they are considered to be muksa, and they have a restriction, as Rashi says over here. Ashur misum muksa, muksa asura midrabanan. It's a din derabanan that you can't engage with these items, and that would be the problem of hakana, that since you didn't prepare it, since it wasn't ready to be used on Shabbat, it's muksa, because it's not something that you would have intended to use on Shabbat or had in your mind for Shabbat, and that's a problem of muksa. That's one way to view hakana. The other way to view Achana is to suggest that it's a separate requirement, which in the Gemara in Beitza is discussed and even raises the possibility of a concept of Muksa d'oraita, which is that the necessity in the Parshat Aman to prepare things by Yom HaShishi, where it says, Vayah by Yom HaShishi, Vehechinu Asher Yaviu, that you have to do things on Yom HaShishi in order to be ready for Yom Shabbat. And so therefore, things that are ready to be used on Shabbat, they are considered to be mukhan. But if something isn't ready to be used on the sixth day, meaning on Friday, for Shabbat, then it becomes mukse, or not mukhan. And it's not mukhan, you can't utilize it on Shabbat. There's a demand that it be ready before Shabbat to be used on Shabbat, not that it becomes ready on Shabbat itself. That's another view of what hachana is. The third view in hachana is that it's a problem of nolad, which is that the difference between being prepared on Erev Shabbat and Shabbat is a difference in Nolad. And that's, I think, the Raivat says that Hachana prevents the problem of Nolad. Without Hachana, you end up with Nolad because something new has happened on Shabbat itself. Either way, the suggestion here is that Rabbi Yehuda's view within Hachana is going to be influential over here. Titznan, we have a Mishnah at the end of Shabbat. Mechatchine te duluim lifnei ha-beima. Beta nevela lifnei klavim. One can chop up gourds for the animal to eat, and they can cut up a nevela for the dogs to eat. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im lo hayta nevela me'erev Shabbat, asura. If it wasn't already a nevela before Shabbat came in, then it's problematic. Lefi she'enu min hamuchan, because it's not prepared, it's not ready. Alma. So you see from this, kevin lo de'itchan me'etmol asura. Since it wasn't ready yesterday, it's asura. Hachanami, kevin lo itchan metmol, asura. Since it wasn't ready yesterday, it should be problematic. So let's deal with the Mishnah itself. As far as the duluim are concerned, Rashi over here says that they are duluim tlushim. They're already detached. There's no Isser on Shabbat in terms of cutting up things that are detached already. So you would have to explain this the way Rashi explains it in the Gemara in Shabbat, is that the question here is a question of tircha yateva, which is that the duluim themselves are not as edible for the animals in their current state when they're whole, the gourds. They may be chopped up into pieces to make them more edible for the animals, and there is a restriction on Shabbat of tircha yateva, exerting oneself, doing extra work that is unnecessary on Shabbat. So the chamim were mitakein gozer in certain areas that you're not allowed to engage in such activities. And possibly you would have thought this was one of them, that the duluim, since it would require exertion and effort that is not necessarily necessary on Shabbat, we won't allow you to do that tircha yitera on Shabbat. So it comes along the Mishnah and says you are allowed to do that. Mechatchim et duluim lifnei ha-beima on Shabbat. And it's not classified as a tircha she'en tzricha. In the Gemara in Shabbat, Tosafot claims that the problem you would have thought possibly is that by cutting them out, you're making them ra'ui l'achila because you soften them and therefore make them ra'oi l'achilat behema. And so that's what the Mishnah is telling you, that it's not a problem to be mirakech them, to make them ra'oi l'achilat behema in this manner of cutting. The Dalia Tosafot over here say, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the Mairi did nitlash min amichubar b'Shabbat. Rabbeinu Tam says that it was detached from something that was attached on Shabbat. Domia de nevela shnitnavla b'Shabbat. Similar to the other case in the Mishnah, which is the nevela that happened on Shabbat. The fact that it was attached coming into Shabbat is the problem. Now it became detached on Shabbat, and that's what the issue is. Can you now utilize it? And then Tosafot just adds on to explain this sheet of the Rabbeinu Tam, that the diluim were attached and became detached. He says, according to Rabbeinu Tam, so you have to argue here that it's in a situation or a circumstance where we don't worry about that. We let him take the gourd that detached on Shabbat, that you're not going to go and then actively detach gourds on Shabbat. And you also have to assume that it's not a problem of grugarot and simukim, which are dried fruits. Because Rabbi Shimon believes that even though there's no muksa in general with regards to Shabbat, there's certain items that are mikatze midato. You actively put them into muksa, and that's something that really does go into the muksa. Muksa was the terminology used for the area set aside to dry the fruits. It's something where you put it out of sight, out of mind, which is that you put up the fruits there to dry, and you have no intent to go and eat them or utilize them for the months until after they are dried out. So those are up in the muksa. So the grugarot utzimukim that you put up in the muksa, even Rabbi Shimon agrees that that is considered to be muksa and would not be used on Shabbat. So you have to also believe that this gourd is not in that category. Even though it was attached going into Shabbat, it's still not in the category of something that's totally out of mind, something that you pushed out via daim. Because these are the two reasons you would say something that was attached and became detached on Shabbat, why you can't utilize it. So you would have to get over both of those hurdles in order to explain this diluim like the Rabbeinu Tam. So to overcome those problems of the Rabbeinu Tam about the muksa and the shema yitlosh, the Baal HaTosafot would say, when you say that if you took fruits that detach from the tree themselves, you might come to pick fruits, that's because picking fruits is something easy to do. You just stick your hand out and you pick it off. That we worry about. And people love fruits. They're sweet. They're something that's a delicacy, something they look forward to. And they forget themselves. Maybe you'll do schita when you want liquids that come out of a fruit. It's very easy to squeeze liquids out. Something that requires a hoe and a spade to get it out of the ground. Something that requires much more effort to detach it from the ground. That's enough of a reason to say that we won't worry about you coming to detach it. So Tosafot deals with the detaching issue, which saying that, yes, there are times we worry if it's detached that you will detach it. Over here, that's not one of those cases, because if the gourd detaches by itself, you're not going to come to detach other gourds because it's a much more involved process. Even today, when you want to cut them, you need real good shears to cut them. Vegetables that are in the ground, you'd have to take a spade and dig them out of the ground. So those types of items, we don't worry about a person forgetting themselves and then going and taking out all this equipment to do it. When people forget themselves, when they have to do is stick their hand out and pick it, or they just squeeze something and the juice comes out, that's where people forget themselves. But when it's more involved, people don't forget themselves. And obviously, to get rid of the problem of muksa, you'd have to say it's a case, as we just noted with Rabbi Shimon, that is Yoshev Mitzapeh. He's waiting for the gourd to fall off. He's excited about it. He's waiting for it. And therefore, he had it in mind. It wasn't something that he was mikatze min adat, because he anticipated that happening. And same thing with the behema. The behema here is a case where it's teetering, and he's waiting for it to become a nevela. And therefore, he doesn't put it out of mind. And that's why there's no issue of muksa, according to Rabbi Shimon, or Yoshev mitzapesh mishchatenu cher shote v'katan. That maybe a person who's not a bardat will come and do the shechita, and someone else would be overseeing them at that time or watching them at that time, and so therefore gets rid of the problem muksa according to Rabbi Shimon. So Rashi sees it as a tircha yetera problem. Rabbeinu Tam says that the problem is that it detached from something that was attached. Coming into Shabbat, it wasn't ra'oi. It was on the tree. It was attached to the ground. You couldn't utilize it. Now it became detached on Shabbat. Question is, can you utilize it now that it became detached? And then that would be similar to the second scenario in the Mishnah, which is Mechatchin et Nevela. The case here is that the Nevela happened on Shabbat itself. Going to Shabbat, the animal was alive. The animal dies on Shabbat. Going to Shabbat, the animal was not ra'oi la'achila because it was alive. Then it comes into Shabbat, all of a sudden it became a nevela. Now it becomes animal feed. But that only happened on Shabbat itself. So once again, you would have assumed that it's a problem of mukseh. Along comes the Mishnah and says you're allowed to do it. And that would be most likely the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, who believes that there is no din of mukseh. And Stam Mishnah in Shabbat is a liba de Rabbi Shimon, who holds that there is no mukseh. And Rabbi Yehuda comes to disagree and says that there is a din of mukseh. And therefore, either according to Rashi, the first case is a case of tircha yetera, so it's not exactly a mukseh case, but the case of nevela is a mukseh case. And Rabbi Yehuda says about nevela, if it was a nevela before Shabbat, then you already had in mind to give it to your dogs. And therefore, when you do it on Shabbat, that's not a problem of mukseh, because that's what your intent would have been already on Erev Shabbat. But if it was alive on Erev Shabbat, and then only became an avail on Shabbat, when you walked into Shabbat, there was no intent to utilize this item for your dog feed. And therefore, when it happens on Shabbat, you can't utilize it for your dog feed, because that's a change in the status of the animal. So you see from Yehuda, if something wasn't ready, wasn't mukhan, already on Erev Shabbat, it's not permitted to be used on Shabbat. And say the same thing by the animal in our Mishnah. Coming into Shabbat, the animal was alive. The shechita that happened on Shabbat, fine, it's an efficacious shechita, but still, you have a problem, a separate issue, that it wasn't mukhan, it wasn't ready before Shabbat, it wasn't in this category before Shabbat, and that's what prevents you from eating it on Shabbat itself. So that's the issue of the Mishnah, and applying that Mishnah in Shabbat to the Mishnah over here, that's what would drive the Bnei Yeshiva to think that Rav's statement that you can't eat it on Shabbat is Rabbi Yehuda's position, which is that if it's not mukhan, mayor of Shabbat, it's restricted on Shabbat itself. Amalei Abaye. Abaye says Rabbi Abba, mi domi. Can't compare the two cases. Hata mi kara mukhan le adam, vashta mukhan le klavim. You had a change in status over here. Originally, the animal was food for human beings, food for human consumption, and now on Shabbat, it turned into something that is now animal feed. That's a change in the status of the animal. Hacha miikara mukhan le'adam, v'hashta mukhan le'adam. The guards to the shechita in our Mishnah, it originally was food for humans, and it remains food for humans. And maybe the problem here of the achana is the change in status. Had it been that it was ebeima mukhan le'adam all the way along, maybe over there Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it's not a problem. And even though there is a problem of muksa machmat isur, eiver minachai, which we'll get to later on today's daf, nevertheless, that's not, at least according to Abaye, important. He doesn't think that there's muksa machmat isur unless you mekatze midato or you mekatze biyadayim. And therefore, it's not deemed to be muksa machmat isur, only a problem of achana. And the problem of achana is overcome because it was mukhan le'adam, and it's still mukhan le'adam. So that's not a problem of achana, no problem of muksa. So then you should be fine on Shabbat, unlike the case of the nevela. So the Gemara says, "Misavart beima bechaya la'achila umedet." Right, you're making an assumption that an animal, when it's alive, is ready to be eaten, or that the primary purpose of the animal is for its consumption. If that's the case, then you could say "Mukhan la'adam, mukhan le'adam." Nothing changed. But beima bechaya la'gadel umedet. Maybe an animal, when it's alive, is for the purposes of reproduction, creating new animals, or getting bigger and beefing itself up. I mean, that there are reasons that an animal might have a primary purpose other than to consume the animal itself. So if when it's alive, it's for reproduction, it's for work or something else, then it would be a change in status similar to what happens with the nevela. The nevela was mukhan le'adam, then became mukhan le'behema. Went from being edible for human beings to a point where it was ra'oi le'klavim. Over here too, it went from an animal that was ra'oi le'gadel to an animal now that is ra'oi le'achila. So there's also a change in status in this animal. And therefore the cases would be parallel. Where it says, Ihochi, behema the Rabbi Yehuda b'yom tov heiche shachtinan. Wait a minute. If you suggest that an animal prior to Shabbat is not considered to be a food item. It's not considered to be within the purview of Adam that he would eat it. Then how do you ever shecht an animal on Yom Tov? We know on Yom Tov you're allowed to do shechita. Well, if you tell me that something on Erev Yom Tov, while it's alive, is something that's not mukhan, and that means when you do the shechita on Yom Tov, you're changing the status of the animal from something that was omeid the gadel to something that's now omeid the achila. That would be a problem of mukse, because mukse is determined by whatever the status of the item is, ben hashmashot. Ben hashmashot coming into Yom Tov, the animal was still alive. Given that it was alive, it has a problem of mukse because it was omeid the gadel. It was something that was used for purposes other than consumption. Then when you shecht it on Yom Tov, you've changed the status of the animal. That should be a problem then, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So how is it that you shecht on Yom Tov, according to Rabbi Yehuda? Amar lo, he says that an animal has a dual status. Omedet the achila, omedet the gadel. The animal has dual status. It has the status of being ready for consumption. It also has the status of being for reproduction, for purposes other than consumption. Nishchata. When you do the Shechita on Yom Tov, Huvrara v'la'achila omedet. Lidmafreya, retroactively, it clarifies for us that the purpose of this animal was le'achila. Lo nishchata, like in the case of Shabbat, when you enter into Shabbat, Huvrara v'la'gadel omedet. Then it is clear that the purpose of this animal was for its reproductive purposes, purposes other than consumption. And so then, that would be the distinction that you'd make over here. The distinction between the case of Shabbat and Yom Kippur versus Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, when you do the Shechita on Yom Tov, that Shechita indicates to us the whole purpose of the animal was the Achila. Now, on Shabbat, when he does Shechita on Shabbat, that doesn't change the animal retroactively, because when you came into Shabbat, Shechita was Asura. And that means when you entered Shabbat, it was clear that this animal is the Gadel, because the option of Shechita is not available to you on Shabbat. Since that option is not available, that already means the decision point at Ben Hashmashot was already determined. And that means that it was the Gadel and remains Mukse. If that's the case, now, again, we can explain this whole situation as a problem of Al-Khana. But it is that the problem of the Behemah here is that you have something that coming to Shabbat was undetermined. Then once Shabbat came in, it made a determination that it's the Gadel and it's not the Achila. Then on Shabbat, when you shecht it, you've tried to change the status from something that was legadel to something that's achila. And that's parallel to the case of nevela. Going into Shabbat, the animal was ra'ui le'adam. The status changed on Shabbat because it died and now becomes ra'ui le'klavim. And over there, Rabbi Yehuda said, you can't cut up the nevela for the klavim on Shabbat because it's a problem of achana, a problem of mukse, however you formulate it. And similarly in our Mishnah, it's the same problem. It wasn't mukhan before, it is mukhan now. And on Yom Tov, you don't have that problem because of the fact that once you come into Yom Tov and you shecht it, retroactively, that indicates the fact that you intended it for consumption, and therefore it opts for the dual status, it pushes it towards the status of ra'oi l'achila, and that means that it was mukhan coming into Yom Tov, because once you shecht it, it clarifies the fact that that was the purpose of this animal. So that's how you explain the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why the Bnei Yeshiva said Rabbi Yehuda's position is the way to explain Rav's position in his explanation of our Mishnah. Right, so now the Gemara says, wait a minute, that's a beautiful setup, but that all assumes that Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to the concept of Breira, that you're able to retroactively assign the status of an item. Va'alele the Rabbi Yehuda Breira. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't subscribe to Breira. Breira is the ability retroactively to set the standard of some item or the status of an item. That is, at the time that you needed it, like for instance here, Ben Hashmashot, it was unknown as to what the status of the animal was. Later on in Yom Tov, your actions then help us clarify for us what was back at the time of Ben Hashmashot. It's not that at the time of Ben Hashmashot there was known information, just you didn't know it. And now Huvrara Davar, now it got clarified, that's not considered to be Breira. That means that it was already decided. You just had a lack of information. Breira is a case where the information was completely unknown at that point, and it's only clarified at a later date. Once it's clarified at a later date, we can go back retroactively and say that was the intent, that was the status at that point in time. And what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that's how Rabbi Yehuda allows you to shecht an animal on Yom Tov. The Gemara says, is that really true? Because Rabbi Yehuda doesn't subscribe to this concept of Breira Minolon. The Gemara says, how do you know that? Is it Inei Mevidetanya? Is it from a Breita? This is a Breita, as you can see in the Masorta Shas, appears all over Shas. It appears in all the sugyot that deal with Breira. Part of it appears in a Mishnah in Demai, and it also appears in other situations about whether we worry about certain things happening or not happening. And so therefore it appears in numerous places in Shas, which is, someone purchased wine from the Kutim. Now, obviously, as the Bali Tosafot point out over here, that this is a case before they were gozer on the Kutim, or Yain Kutim. So before they put a gzer in place that the Yain of Kutim is like Yain Nesech, and that you can't take from the Yain of the Kutim, that's what we saw back in Davov, that Rabbi Meir and others were buying from the Kutim, until they found out that there was a problem, then they were mitakein or gozer, that their Yain is problematic. This has to be before that period of time. That's number one. Number two, as Rashi notes over here, it is Kutim and not Amei Haaretz that we're speaking about here, because there's a difference between a Kuti and an Amaretz. In Amaretz, based on the survey that was done by Yochanan Kohen Gadol, we find out that Rov Amei Haaretz take off Trumot and Masrot. And all Amei Haaretz take off Trumah Gedola. And that means that by an Amaretz, you only have to be Mafrish Misafek, it's Demai, that's number one. And number two is that you don't have to take off Truma Gdola. We're not Choshesh for Truma Gdola, and you start from the point of Maisa Rishon. The Bright over here is going to tell us you have to take off Truma Gdola, and you have to assume that there were no Trumot Masrot taken off of it at all. So it's not Demai, and there's a Chiyuv of Truma Gdola. That's the difference between a Kuti and an Amaretz. Kuti is not Mafrish Trumot Masrot whatsoever, whereas an Amaretz, Rov Amaretz take them off, and the assumption is that even those that aren't so careful, they at least take off Truma Gdola, because it's so easy to do, and there's a Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shemayim, so they at least address that issue. Now, the truth is that the Kutim follow things that are written in the Torah, and over here, these are items that are written in the Torah, Trumot, Masrot. How come they're not abiding by those mitzvot if they're written in the Torah? The answer is that they don't hold of Lifnei Ver Lo Titen Mechshol. And over here, where they're selling the item, they don't think there's any obligation to be take off Trumot O Masrot. Either they think there's no obligation to take it off, or even if there is an obligation, they don't care about it because that's the other person's problem, it's not their problem, because they don't worry about other people sinning. That's why over here we're speaking about Kutim and not Amei Haaretz. So, Keach Yayim Ben Kutim, Omer. The problem is that he doesn't have another kli in which to separate out these items. That's preventing him from doing Trumot Masrot in a normal fashion by taking out that which is in the jug or the barrel, the wine that's there. He can't separate out the Truma, separate out the Maaser Rishon. So we have to do it in a manner that allows him to drink it on Shabbat without violating the issues of Tfalim. So what you do is you say, Shnei Lugim Shani Atid Afrish. In the future, I'm going to take off 2 log from this. So the assumption here is that you have 100 log. And he's going to take off 2 log in the future, which is 2%, which is the middle range truma. So in the future, I'm going to take off harien truma, meaning truma gedola. Asara, the next 10 that I'm going to take off, 10 logim, they're going to be maaser rishon. Now obviously this is not exact, because if you already took off 2 log for truma gedola, there's only 98 log left. That means that you only have to take off 9.8 for the maaser rishon, not 10, but they're just rounding it, and you'll see that throughout the Braita that it's rounded numbers. But I take off 10 lugim, and that'll be my maaser rishon in the future. Tisha, then I have 90 left. The truth is I don't have 90 left. I really have 88.2 left, because I took off 2, and then I took off 9.8, which is 11.8 taken off, which means that I have 88.2 left. And so now I'd have to take off 10%, which would be 8.82. Nevertheless, it just rounds it up to 9. And says that, well, if I took off Maaser Rishon, which was 10, I'm left with 90, so another 10% would be 9. Maaser Sheni, that'll be Maaser Sheni, Umeichal. And then you can, Rashi says, redeem it. Since whatever you have the capacity to do, we tell you to do right away. So over here, if you have the ability to take care of the Maaser Sheni and redeem it, we tell you to redeem it. And since you can be Mitakno Bamira Balma, since you can fix the problem simply by articulation, and do the chilul, lo itiru lo chachamim lishtoto lismoch ala breira. Kamim said, don't use Breira, where you have a simple solution to the problem, even though you don't have another Kli, and that is to redeem the Maisur Sheni and get rid of that problem. Rashi assumes here that they have the capacity to separate out the Maisur Sheni in your head, and therefore you could redeem it, Be'dibur Ba'alma. The Tosfot in Gitin points out that that's just not true, because over here we're not dealing with Demai Ben Ashmashot, where it's a Safek, and therefore we allow you to do it in your head, and just say that Maisur Sheni Bitzvono Bedromo. Over here you're dealing with real Maisur Sheni, something that's Tevel Vadai, and therefore you have to be Mafrish the Maisur Sheni physically, and just Dibur Ba'alma is not going to work, and if that's the case, you can't be redeeming the Maisur Sheni, because it has yet to be distinct or separated out. And therefore there's no room for redemption or Pidyon over here, and therefore you're going to have to give an alternate explanation to the word Meichal. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam learns the word not as mechal, from to redeem, but rather mehal, mohel, which means to mix. And therefore, he says it's a synonym to mosaic, that he dilutes the wine. Mechal means then you can go ahead and dilute the wine, vishoten, and drink miyad, and drink it immediately, divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the view of Rabbi Meir. So Rashi views as mechal as modifying the Maisur Sheni, whereas the Rabbeinu Tam says the mechal is mechal vishoten. Or the Tosfot in Gitin, and the way the Rambam describes it is Meichal, means umatchil, from the word heichel, to begin. Then you can begin to drink. So they explain it differently than Rashi, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Osrim. They all say it's Asur. Now when you say it's Asur, does that mean that whatever you did fails? And that means that you have Tebel now? Or do we say whatever you did works, but it just, you can't segregate it? You can't determine which is Truma, which is not. Now you have Neduma. You have things that are mixed between them. So that's a machloket in the Rishonim. Rashi says in other places that it is a mixture, and therefore you don't know if you're drinking Chulin or Truma. Whereas the Bali Tosafot in other places suggests that it fails completely, and therefore you would be drinking Tevel. So the Gemara says, Hotam Kedetani Taimo. What do you mean? Over there it's explicit as to what the reasoning is. Amrulo the Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim, meaning Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, all say to Rabbi Meir, Iyatamodeh, Shema Yibakanot, aren't you afraid that the flask, whatever the wine is being held in, will burst? And then he's unable in the end to solve the problem, because retroactively he never took off the items. They disappeared. And that means whatever he drank until that time period was a problem of Tevel, because he never separated out the Truma and all the other stuff in the end. So Rabbi Meir responds to them, L'chshik yivaka, hanod, that when it breaks, we'll discuss it. In essence, what Rabbi Meir is saying is that's an uncommon occurrence, and we don't worry about these far-fetched issues. Yeah, it could happen, but that's not the normal circumstance. Since that's not the normal circumstance, then we allow it. So now, what the Gemara is implying here is that this is not an issue of Breira. It's a separate issue. It's a chashash, whether it's Bokea or not Bokea, which means everybody thinks that it would have worked, the Breira. The only question is, do we worry about it bursting and therefore having a problem, or do we not worry about it bursting? It's a totally different issue. Now, the Balei Tosafot are somewhat bothered by this, because the Gemara in other places uses this as a proof for an issue of Breira. The Balei Tosafot want to say, Kashali, over here we're speaking in the Shita of Rav, and Rav himself doesn't think that the reason for that Breita is Bikiyat Anod. And he thinks the reasoning for Rabbi Yehuda in this case is Ein Breira. Here the Gemara leaves it as a Pshitut, that the reason for that Breita is Shema Yivaka Anod, and nothing to do with Breira. Yet the Gemara in other places, especially according to Rav, thinks that the conclusion from this Breita is that a machloket about Breira. So it's a Rabbeinu Shimshon Mikutzi asks another question, which is the upcoming Gemara is going to bring a Mishnah from Ayo, and that Mishnah is going to clearly indicate that Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira. Yet the way you're explaining the Gemara here is it is Breira. So then why is it that the Gemara comes to this conclusion over here? And so Tosfot says, nearly, Tahacha dechuya ba'al mahu. That the truth is that the Gemara here is just rejecting it. But in the end, Ayo proves the fact that Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to Breira. And therefore, Shema Yibaka Anod can't be the issue. It's a real issue of Breira in the end. So what the Tosfot is saying is that all the Gemara is doing over here is saying there is an alternative way to explain that Breita. And since there is an alternative way to explain that Breita, it's not definitive from that Breita that Rabbi Yehuda believes ain't Breira. Now, we will find out from other information or other places that Rabbi Yehuda really does believe in Breira, and that is the proper explanation, at least according to Rav, of that Breita. But in the interim, all the Gemara is pointing out is Shema Yibaka Node. Shema Yibaka Node is a way to dismiss this as being a definitive proof that Rabbi Yehuda holds in Breira. And that will also help with the question that's raised as to what was the Gemara thinking in the first place. If it's Kedetani Taima, if the reason's written by the Breita, then why did you even bring it in the first place as a proof of Breira? The Breita tells you that it's an issue of Yibaka Node, because it's written there. They have that argument. So what you have to say is that argument is a sidebar, which is, it's not the real reason, they're just querying. Maybe, even if you hold there is Breira, Rabbi Meir, there's a separate issue of Shema Yibaka Anod. What do you do with that, Rabbi Meir? And Rabbi Meir responds to them about that. But that doesn't change the fact that maybe the Breita's real issue is an issue of Breira. That's what Tosafot is saying. This is a Dechuya Ba'alma. Now we're going to get to the meat of how we know that Rabbi Yehuda believes that ain't Breira, which is Ela Medetani Ayo. Ayo is a Chacham. He brings a Breita, which is the Tani Ayo. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ain't Adam Matnea Shnei Dvarim Kechad. Person can't create a condition on two items simultaneously. Ella, it has to be Imba Chacham the Mizrach, Eruvo the Mizrach. The Chacham comes to the east, his Eruv will be in the east. Limarav, if he comes to the west, Eruvo the Marav. Then his Eruv is on the western side. Ve'ilo, Lekan, Ulekan, Lo. But if he says that it'll be one or the other, it'll pick, it'll be in the east or the west later on, that he can't do. And then we questioned Maishna the Kano the Khan. Dolo. What's the reason that when he says, well, I'll get to choose whether I go to the east or the west, why does that not work? Dain Breira. Because you don't have the ability retroactively to set where the Eruv was. Mizrach Umarav Nami Ain Breira. Should have the same problem with Mizrach Umarav. The context of this Breita is in the Gemara in Eruvin with dealing with Eruvei Tchumin. This is the ability of a person on Shabbat to travel the distance of 2,000 amot in any one of the four directions. That is based on the Shvitah, where he made his location, his house on Shabbat. From that location, he has 2,000 amot in any direction, and that's what's permissible to go on Shabbat. If, for whatever reason, he needs to go further, what he can do is he can set up, Ben HaShmashot, his living place, his Shvitah, at some other location, and he does that by placing bread and food items there to indicate that that is his makom shvita, and then that will determine his location. And if that location is, say, 2,000 amot to the east, then this individual can go no further to the west because he's at the end of the 2,000 amot, but now he can go 4,000 amot to the eastern side. So the purpose of putting up there of tchumim is to shift where your 2,000 amot are, where your center of those 2,000 amot are. So here this individual hears that there's a chacham coming to give a drasha. But the chacham is outside of his tchum. He's more than 2,000 amot away from where this individual lives. And that means if he did nothing coming into Shabbat, he won't be able to attend the drasha. So what he does is he says, I'm going to put an Eruv up. When the chacham shows up, I'll know whether I need to go to the east or the west. So on Erev Shabbat, he puts down to the east and he says, if the chacham comes to the eastern side, that'll be my Eruv. And then I will have 4,000 amot to the eastern side, so I'm going to go hear the drasha. If he doesn't show up, then I'll just stay home and this will be my Eruv. Same to the west. He says, if the Chacham comes to the western side, my Eruv will be 2,000 amot out to the western side. Now give me 4,000 amot to the western side so I can go attend the Shiur. If he doesn't come, then my Shvita is where I am. So the Gemara is saying, isn't that a form of Breira? You're saying that if he comes to the west, then my Eruv will take effect. Or if he comes to the east, my Eruv will take effect. Isn't that Breira? Otherwise, yeah, my Eruv won't take effect. So that's a form of Breira, which is only if the Chacham comes into a location will it trigger that Eruv for you. But you don't know about that because the Chacham at this point in time could be 4,000 amot away from the location where this individual can go to. And he only comes in, meaning that the Shabbat came in, the Chacham was 4,000 amot away. He can, in his mind, the Gemara in Eruvin says, if he knows a tree or location coming up, he can set that as his Shvita, and that'll grant him the right to move 4,000 amot. That means that he was not within striking range of this individual when Shabbat came in. It's only now, after he comes into Shabbat, he walks into the area that would trigger this individual's Eruv, that we know that it was triggered on Erev Shabbat, Ben HaShemashot. So that means that it was done retroactively. What Ayo says is that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow you to do this if you place it to the east and the west. Which is that if the Chacham comes to the east, Meirv's in the east. If the Chacham comes to the west, then my Erev is in the west. Or if they come from both sides, I'll get to choose which one I want to go to. So Ayo says Rabbi Yehuda disallows that. The Gemara wants to know, why does he disallow the case when you're making a choice, L'shnei Kivunim, versus when it's in one direction? Both of them are relying on the same halachic principle of Breira. If Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold a Breira, it shouldn't work in either of these cases. So the answer to that question is, Ba'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kvar Ba'chacham. The Chacham already came. Which means that it's not a case where the Chacham is outside the Tchum, and then he enters the Tchum on Shabbat, and that's what triggers your Eruv retroactively. It says, I put out the Eruv 2000 Amot out to the western side. And then only after Shabbat came in did the Chacham reach a point that would have been 4,000 Amot away from you, which would then mean that you could go hear the Shiur. That happened on Shabbat. Retroactively, then your Eruv was an effective Eruv. So that would be Breira. So Rabbi Yochanan says that's not what's happening. The case here is where the Chacham is already there. He already reached it. You don't know about it, but he's already reached there. So when you put out your Eruv Tchumin, the information is known, just not known to you. So later on Shabbat, when you find out that Chacham's there, it's not that your Eruv is now triggered retroactively. It was already triggered at Ben HaShemashot because he was already in location. That means that there's no Breira going into effect over here. The Eruv was already effective at Ben HaShemashot because the information was known. The information, even though you didn't know it, but the information was known in general, and therefore there's no issue of Breira. It's just what's called Giloy Milta. The information is now being disclosed or clarified to you, but that doesn't mean it wasn't already there, Ben HaShemashot. So your Eruv was effective, Ben HaShemashot. Nothing to do with the information you find now. You're just finding out that it was because of the fact that he was already there, Ben HaShemashot. What Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow is for you to pick afterwards. It says that even in Kvar Ba'chacham, and you have on the east and the west, and you put out an Eruv in either direction, you say, I'll decide which one I'll go to. And then once you've decided retroactively, that triggers that as the Eruv Ben HaShemashot, that's a case of Breira. So what you see from this Breita is that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of Breira. So if Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of Breira, that undermines our whole explanation till this point in time. We said that Rabbi Yehuda requires Hachana. If you don't have Hachana, it's Muksa. And that's the problem with our animal over here. Our animal that you shechted was Omeid the Gadel. Maybe even Omeid the Achilah, but we don't know. So it's at least Omeid the Gadel, which make it Muksa. Since Shabbat came in and the status changed, that makes it that it's Muksa or it's not Mukhan, and therefore you can't eat it on Shabbat, and that's what's driving Rav's explanation of the Mishnah. How then do you shecht animals on Yom Tov? We said, oh, that was Breira. When you shecht it on Yom Tov, retroactively you determined that its status was Achilah, not the Gadel. But that all assumes that you hold a Breira. Here we have evidence that Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to this Breira, and therefore now it's a house of cards. Everything falls down because you can't explain why you can eat on Yom Tov. That means that Rabbi Yehuda obviously believes that on Yom Tov, an animal is Ra'oi La'achila because it was Ra'oi La'achila beforehand. That means an animal is always Ra'oi La'adam and Ra'oi La'achila. That's why you can check that on Yom Tov. But that means that on Shabbat it was Ra'oi La'achila. When you shecht on Shabbat, it should be Mukhan. And that's distinct from the case in Nevelah, where on Erev Shabbat it was Mukhan Le'adam, and now on Shabbat it's Mukhan Le'klavim. And that means that it's not an issue of Hachana, because nothing changed. The status of the animal was the same on Shabbat from before and afterwards, and same on Yom Tov, it was always the same. It was Ra'oi La'achila. It's Ra'oi La'achila, then there's no issue of Mukhan. The only case you have a problem with Mukhan is the case where it switched from being Mukhan Le'adam to Mukhan Le'klavim. That's where Rabbi Yehuda says there's a problem of Achona. But now we can't then explain how Rav got to his position, and the Bnei Yeshiva said that was Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. So now we have to come up with a different Rabbi Yehuda to explain this. Ela, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, the Kelim Hi. It's Rabbi Yehuda from the Mishnah about Muksa on Shabbat. Tetzlan, the Mishnah on Shabbat says, Kol HaKelim Yani Talim B'Shabbat, any Keli that's used normally on Shabbat, means not Muksa, Shivrehem, but it broke on Shabbat, Nitalim, you can still take them, Vajiosim Ein Melacha, as long as they do or have some purpose. Shivre Areva, if it was a trough that was broken, the Chasopem Pichavit, it allows you to cover over a jug, it becomes the cork or the plug for a jug. Shivrei zuchit, you have a glass utensil that broke. Lechasov ben piapach, allow you to cover over a pitcher or a dispenser of oil. So they can be the corks or the plugs for the top, you can cover them over. So here, even though that's not their original purpose, but since they had purpose, and they retain a purpose on Shabbat, that's not considered to be mukseh. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, u'b'vachiyosim ein mlachtan. They have to do something that's akin to their original purpose. It can't be that they do anything. It has to be that the original purpose is still manifest in the Shivrei Kelim. Shivrei Areva, so the broken shards of the trough, latsuk l'tocham mikpa, that they're still big enough that you can pour into them some sort of porridge, some sort of viscous type of material that you can put in there. Just like the Areva was used as a trough for something like dough or for some big thing that you're putting in there, so too the piece of the Areva still is able to hold something like porridge in it. Shivrei zuchit, latsuk l'tochan shemen, and the broken shards of glass that you could still pour some oil into them. So in the past, it was a oil storage. It was something that you put oil into. Here, if the shard of glass allows you still to put oil into it or pour oil onto it, then you can use it on Shabbat. Me'ein melachtan in. That's only if they have a similar usage, then it works. Me'ein melacha acheret, lo. But if they have another purpose, even though they still have purpose on Shabbat, it wouldn't work according to Rabbi Yehuda. Alma, kevin delo itchan me'etmol, l'hach melacha asirei. Since it was not purposed for this particular melacha coming into Shabbat, it remains asur. So, over there by the Kelim, the Tanakama, who's Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't have mukseh, says as long as there's utility to the item, then it remains mukhan l'Shabbat. Just like coming into Shabbat, this utensil was usable, and it was a mukseh, as long as it retains some sort of utility on Shabbat, it retains its status of not being mukseh. Rabbi Yehuda says its utilization has to be determined on Erev Shabbat. If the utilization is for a particular purpose, then as long as it maintains that purpose, even if it breaks, then you continue to use it. But if it's repurposed on Shabbat, that's already mukseh, it wasn't mukhan. So what you see is if you didn't prepare something, it doesn't work. Hachanami, kevin delo yitchan me'etmol asura. So too over here, since the item was not prepared beforehand, it's asur on Shabbat. Meaning that here it's similar to the case of Behema. Coming into Shabbat, the Behema wasn't ra'oi la'achila. Now, even if a Behema is omedet la'achila, even if its purpose is the achila, that still doesn't help you over here because when it came into Shabbat, its purpose was not for achila because you didn't check that you didn't prepare it for achila. Then on Shabbat, when you make it into something that's ra'oi la'achila through shechita, that's a change in status of the animal. And it wasn't mukhan for that. That's the case. Now I found a paradigm that will tell me that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that that's problematic, and that's why Rav says you can't eat it on Shabbat, because it wasn't mukhan, and that's the shitat Rabbi Yehuda. So Amar Le Abaye, so Rabbi Yosef's Talmud Abaye says to him, "Mi dami, how are you comparing the cases? Hata mi karakli, vashta sheverkli. Here you have a change in status. Over there in the original scenario, it was a kli. Now it is a shard. It is a semblance of the original kli. It's broken. It's something else now. It's not the kli itself. Vavalei nolad. It is something has changed. It's a new utensil. Vasur. That's what makes it asur. Because when it doesn't do me'ein melachto, it doesn't do something akin to the original utility, then you've created a new item on Shabbat. And nolad is muksa. V'hocha, that's not true. Mi'ikara uchla, u'b'lesof uchel. In the beginning it was ochel, in the end it's ochel. Ve'ochla de'ifratu. And it's just a piece of ochel that's separated away from a bigger piece of ochel. Meaning, the assumption being, based on what we said until now, is that an animal is mukhan achila. So that's why you can shecht it on Yom Tov. On Shabbat, if it dies, the reason you can't use it is because it's switched from being ro'i le'adam to ro'i le'klavim. We're suggesting over here that there's also a change in status, which was, even though it was ra'oi la'achila before Shabbat, now on Shabbat you made it really ra'oi la'achila by doing shechita. There's some change in status. What Abaye is pointing out is that's not a change in status, because something attached to ochel that detaches from it is considered to be the original ochel. Just like this animal was ra'oi la'achila coming into Shabbat, even though technically you can't eat it because it's missing shechita, once the shechita happens, anything that detaches from this animal, that is a food item that derives from this animal, is just a derivative of the original animal, which was classified as being ra'oi la'achila. That's the case. There's no nolad over here. Nothing changed over here. It was ochel originally, and it's also ochel now. It's just a derivative of the original ochel. And we know that Rabbi Yehuda says when ochel detaches from ochel, that it's not considered to be nolad. That's not considered to be a new item or new creation. It's not. Ein sochatim et haperot, lotzi mehen mashkim. One may not squeeze fruits on Shabbat to take out the juices from them. Sochet is a melacha on Shabbat. It comes from bifareik, which means to separate away items from their original content. And that is a toldav dash. And so therefore it's a melacha on Shabbat. Vim yatzu me'atzman asurim. If they come out by themselves, it is asur. Rabbi Yehuda omer, im lo ochlim, if the intent or the purpose of these items is for ochel, hayotzei mehen mutar. That which comes out of them, that which drips out of them is mutar. Vim lo mashkim, if their purpose is for liquids, hayotzei mehen asur. Then that which derives from them is asur. So, the liquids that emanate from them by themselves on Shabbat, according to everyone, are mutarim. Technically, midoraita. You didn't squeeze it on Shabbat. Liquids came out by themselves on Shabbat. They should have been mutar. The reason that we don't allow you to do this is because if we allow you to drink whatever these liquids are, you're going to come to be sochet. You're actually going to do schita on Shabbat. Now, schita on Shabbat is a melocha. So that's what we're worried about. But Rabbi Yehuda points out is that's not always true. Sometimes schita is a problem. Sometimes schita is not a problem. Depends on what the purpose of this item is. The purpose of this item is ochel, then ochel doesn't have a din of schita. Anything that derives from ochel is what's called ochel de ifratu. It's a piece of the ochel that's separated away from in the main ochel. So if you intend to eat grapes, which is not a good example because of what the Gemara is about to say, but I'm just using it in the modern day example, which is people buy grapes to eat them. So now, if you put them in a bowl to eat them and then some liquid leaches out of them, we're not going to say that liquid is asur according to Rabbi Yehuda because the purpose of these is to eat them. You're not going to squeeze these grapes. You intend to eat the grapes. Therefore, anything that comes out of them is just ochel. That's also additional ochel. You have no interest in the liquid. You have an interest in eating it. And therefore, it's not a problem. Then, if you intend to squeeze these grapes and liquid emanates from them or exudes from them, then we worry if you're going to take that liquid, then you're going to squeeze them to let the liquid out. So Yehuda differentiates between ochel and mashkim. And what you see from that is that Rabbi Yehuda believes that ochel de ifratu, that ochel de ifrat is not a problem of nolad. It's not a new entity. It's a part and parcel of the original item. And as it detaches from the original item, it remains connected or is a derivative of the original item. And therefore it's mutar on Shabbat. And so what Abaye is pointing out is there's a huge distinction in the cases here. In the case where you have a broken kli, you went from being a utensil to a shard. That's a change in status, and that's a problem of nolad, unless it has the same utility as the original kli. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda is oseret. But in a case where you have an item that was zomei l'achila before Shabbat, then when it becomes ro'oi l'achila on Shabbat itself, we consider that to be a derivative of the original item. And since it was mukhan coming into Shabbat because it was zomei l'achila, so too, when you eat it on Shabbat, whatever you get after the Shkita is a derivative of that, it's not nolad. And so even though the shefting of the animal is a little different than the shever kli, where it was mukhan le'adam and still mukhan le'adam, over here the Be'ima, yes, was mukhan le'adam and is now mukhan le'adam, but it still had to go through the talich of Shkita. So how is that it's considered to be mukhan? That's based on this principle of ukhla de ifratu, which is that even if something changes from a solid to a liquid, it's still considered to be ochel, and it hasn't changed its status, it's not nolad. And so to over here, even though it changed from something that had an isur of Eivir Min HaChai or ishachut on it, and now it's shefted, it's still considered to be a derivative of the original mukhan and ochel mukhan that you had before Shabbat. And that he proves from the fact that by schita, if the item was designated for achila, we don't worry about the liquids that emanate from it, because we consider them to be ochel that detached from the item, not a liquid. So Gemara says, to this dismissal of Abaye, lavit marla. Don't we have a qualification of that din of Rabbi Yehuda, that Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, modehaya Rabbi Yehuda l'chachamim. Miura agrees to the Chachamim, b'salei zeitim ve'anavim. If you have baskets full of olives and grapes, that we do worry about it. Alma, came into the shchita kaime, yahav date. Hachanami came into the shchita kaima, yahav date. So to over here, since its intent is for shchita, he's going to put his mind to it and he's going to do something. So what Shmuel notes over here is that the machloki between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is only in regards to tutim and rimonim, which aren't things that are omed the shchita, meaning that there are different categories of fruits. We have certain fruits that their primary purpose is for squeezing out the liquids, and those are grapes and olives. On the other hand, we have fruits that sit in a middle category where some people squeeze them for liquids, some people eat them, and those are the tutim and rimonim, pomegranates and the berries. And then there's another set of fruits which are solely used for achila. In the time of Chazal, that would have included apples, oranges, those types of fruits. They're only the achila. Nobody squeezes them for the juices. Obviously today that might have changed or that reality might be different. But given those three categories, what Shmuel is saying is that Rabbi Yehuda, by the case of Zeitim and Anavim, agrees to the position of the Chachamim. And he agrees that the primary purpose of Zeitim and Anavim is for Shchita. And therefore, even if someone has in mind to eat them, nevertheless, Betela Dato. We say that we don't consider what he's thinking. Since majority of people use them for squeezing out the liquids, he might change his mind, or it's likely that he will change his mind. So even though he designated them for achila, nevertheless, any liquid that exudes from them is a sur, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because we're choshesh that he'll change his mind and want them for shchita. And given that, it's a problem because he'll bash shema yavo lischot. He might come to squeeze them. So even though, again, it is something that he designated achila and shouldn't have been a problem at all, nevertheless, we worry about the fact that he might change his mind. And in that change of mind, we put a gzera in place to say, you can't use the liquids. Tutim and rimonim, there Rabbi Yehuda will make his distinction between whether if you designate them for achila, then whatever exudes from them is fine. As if you designate them for shtia or for shchita, then whatever exudes from them would be problematic, because then you might come to be lischot. The Rabbanan say liquids, period, are a problem, because you might come to squeeze them. So then, based on that view in Rabbi Yehuda, it should be similar to our Mishnah. In the case of our Mishnah, why don't you say we should be gozer, that if we allow him to eat from the animal that was shechted by someone else, he might himself come to do shchita. The reason that Rabbi Yehuda agrees, according to Rashi over here, is because the normal utility of grapes and zeitim is for juice. Therefore, we override what this person's personal interest is. And so too by shchita. The purpose of an animal is lishchot. And if that's the case, then we should be worried about shema yishchot. And so that might be the restriction over here that derives from a Yehuda's position, which is when we have a chashash that you might simulate the outcome that is here in a way that is asur, by the case of the fruits, even though you wanted them achila, but the juice that exuded from them might cause you to come to do shchita or change your mind and then do shchita, there we won't permit you to do it. Similarly, over here, by the animal, we won't let you eat from the shchita, because that might come to cause you to do shchita proactively because of the fact that you're eating meat that was shechted on Shabbat, then you'll come to do shchita on Shabbat itself as well. My answer is, midu taima elu l'Rav. Wait a minute, the whole sugi here is according to Rav. Rav's the one who made the statement on our Mishnah that you're not allowed to eat it that day. Ve'hamar Rav, chaluka ya Rabbi Yehuda, afilu b'salei zeitim b'avanim. And according to Rav, Rabbi Yehuda argues even by olives and by grapes, he argues there that if it's designated for ochel, it's uchla de'ifratu. It becomes food that separates away from food, and therefore there's no isur. And similarly by the animal, even though you did the shechita on Shabbat, since it was something that was for consumption before Shabbat, when it becomes ra'oi la'achila through shechita on Shabbat, it's just a derivative, the original ochel, and therefore it's considered to be mukhan. So yes, Shmuel makes that statement, but we're not speaking in Shmuel's shita here, we're speaking in Rav's shita, and Rav disagrees with Shmuel and says, if he argues, even by salei zeitim ba'anavim. The Baal does a vote, and many Rishonim ask the question over here, which is, why did the Gemara have to go to Salim v'Zeitim to get that position of Rabbi Yehuda, why can't you learn it from the original part of the Mishnah, which is Ein sochatim et peirot asimehem meshkim? Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that in a case where, if you intended to do schita with them, if the liquids exude from them by themselves, you can't take that liquid because shema yavo lischot, because you might come to squeeze them. So why don't we say, based on that, that Rabbi Yehuda would also be osir by schita? Because if we allow him to eat from the schita, he might come to do schita. Why isn't that a derivative of the first part of the Mishnah? Just like we do that from the memra of Shmuel, when we say that Rabbi Yehuda says, by zeitim and anavim, if there, people might come to do shechita, and therefore he's oseret. And therefore we say, extrapolate that to shechita as well. Why can't you learn that from the first part of the Mishnah? The Baal Tosfos will give one answer, which is, if you learned it from the first part of the Mishnah, then it doesn't make sense that the Bnei Yeshiva said this is according to Shita and Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, only if it was intended for mashkim is there a chashash of Shema Yishchot. But if it was intended for Ochel, it wouldn't be a chashash. The Rabbanon arguing say that there's always a chashash for Schita, and therefore it would make it that the Rabbanon would be the more likely authors of our Mishnah, not Rabbi Yehuda. So you can't learn that from the first part of the Mishnah, because the first part of the Mishnah would then have you inclined to say it's not just Rabbi Yehuda, it's the Chachamim. And even more so the Chachamim, and therefore it doesn't make sense that Bnei Yeshiva said that Rav was speaking the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. That's number one. Number two is, he points out, that Shmuel's statement that Zeitim and Anavim are different means that there's a two-stage gzeira over there, and that's what makes it similar to the case of the animal in our Mishnah, which is in that two-stage case over there, you have a situation in which it is intended for achila, and despite the fact that it's intended for achila, the juice that exudes from it is asur, shema yadoya l'day l'schot, because you might come to do schita. So even though that's not your original intent, and even though you had in mind for achila, we're worried about you changing your mind and then doing schita. And therefore, it overcomes a problem that the Baal Tosafot had pointed out previously, which is that squeezing grapes is a melacha that you can do easily. You just put it in your hand and you squeeze it and you've done schita. Shechting an animal is much more involved. It requires equipment. You need a knife and you need to be prepared. It's much more involved, and a person doesn't forget and do schita. So that's why you couldn't have extrapolated from the first half of the Mishnah. The first half of the Mishnah just simply speaks about schita. Schita, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in a case where the person intends for the juices to come out of the fruits. In that scenario, the squeezing of the fruits is a very easy mistake that a person can come to. If they see juice coming out of it and they want more juice, they'll just squeeze it. That's a chashash. But to say someone who is eating from meat that was shechted on Shabbat, that that'll cause him to go and then do shechita, that's a very different situation or circumstance, and we wouldn't expect him just to go forgetting himself and do shechita. But then with the qualification of Shmuel, that changes everything. Because even though over here there's no reason to believe that he's going to do shechita because he intends to eat the grapes and the olives, nevertheless, we still worry about Shema Yischot. So to over here by shechita, even though it's a little more far-fetched to say that he might come to do shechita, nevertheless we see from Rabbi Yehuda, based on Shmuel's qualification, that he worries about you doing shechita, even though that's not a direct line from the problem. You're exuding juices from a fruit that you intend to eat, which should not have triggered in within you this necessity or this forgetfulness to do shechita. And so therefore you shouldn't have been gozer. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda is gozer. So even in a case where it's indirect and it's less likely, we still see Rabbi Yehuda be gozer. And that's why we can now extrapolate that to shechita, which is a less likely case. Nevertheless, we see Rabbi Yehuda, even the less likely case, is gozer. So over here, why don't you say the problem is Shema Yishchot? And that's how the Baal Tosafot explain why we couldn't derive it from the first part of the Mishnah, and why Shmuel's qualification is important to make it parallel with our case in the Mishnah. And again, the Gemara answered that Shmuel's qualification is a Shita Shmuel. Over here, we're trying to reconcile Shita and Rav, and Rav doesn't hold like Shmuel. Rav just says, like the Mishnah says, simply, that when you have intent for Achila, there's no problem. When you have intent for Shtia, or for the liquids that come out of it, then there is a problem, and that's not extrapolable to our Mishnah, because Shema Yischot is a very likely outcome when you intend for the juices. Shema Yishchot is not a very likely outcome, and therefore you can't say, just because Rabbi Yehuda goes there, he goes there over here. Whereas the Ramban suggests that the reason that Rabbi Yehuda believes that liquids that emanate from an ochel is a problem on Shabbat is not because of Shema Yitzchot, but rather because of Nolad. And Nolad, as we already proved, is not relevant by the case of Shechita, because it was Uchla Difradu. And therefore, it's not a problem of Nolad. But once you explain that Rabbi Yehuda believes by Zeitim and Anavim, where it's Omed Achila, and then the juice emanates from them, that you do call that Nolad, and even though it was Uchla Difradu, he still is Gozer over there, Shema Yitzchot, or maybe there's a problem of Nolad, then that would also have application over here by Shechita. Just like here, it's still Uchla Difradu. Nevertheless, since there is a change in status somewhat, therefore maybe it should be a problem of Nolad, or a problem of Shema Yitzchot. And that's how the Ramban explains why we couldn't derive it from the first part of the Mishnah, and why Shmuel's qualification is important to make it parallel with our case in the Mishnah. Now we've left the world of Hachana, because we see that that is not going to work over here. The animal is considered to be Mukhan before Shabbat. It's considered to be something that's Uchla Difrat if it's Shechted on Shabbat. And then that prevents any problems of Nolad or any issues with Mukhan. So now we have to give another view, which is Alam Rav Sheshit, Brei de Rav Yidi, Rav Yehuda de Neiroti. So Rav Yehuda from Neirot, which is an issue of Muksa, not an issue of Hachana. So now we're entertaining the possibility that the problem here is not Hachana, but Muksa, and Muksa Machmedi Sur, which again we mentioned before, was possibly an issue over here that Abaye seems to dismiss in his explanation of Hachana. Here the Gemara takes up the possibility that might be exactly what Rav Yehuda's issue is that Muksa Machmed Isur, the Isur of Eiver Min Achai, which is the Tanya, Metatalim Ner Chadash, one can carry around a new utensil that is used to hold the oil for the lamp, Aval Lo Yashan, but not something that was old. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda's view, because the Yashan is already messy. It had oil in it, and therefore it's Muksa Machmat Mius. It's disgusting. People don't pick it up. Once you have lit a lamp with oil in it already, it becomes oily and sooty, and people don't touch it. It's Muksa Machmat Mius. And then when it's brand new and it's yet to be used for an air, there it's still clean and can be picked up. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda says with regards to Muksa, the ability to carry it on Shabbat. So you want to extrapolate that to the behemoth over here and say that it's muksa because of Eiver Min Achai coming into Shabbat, and therefore on Shabbat itself you should not be able to handle it as well. Gemara says, how did you get from one to the other? Imar Dishmaile Rabbi Yehuda muksa makmat mius. All Rabbi Yehuda says over here is that there's muksa when something is maos, when something is disgusting. Muksa makmat isur mishmaile. How do you know that he thinks that muksa applies to something that is just simply asur? You can't extrapolate from one to the other and say, well, it's muksa machmat yus, should also be muksa machmat isur. And as Tosva knows over here, this is just a dechia ba'alma, because he points out that in general we believe that muksa machmat isur is yoter chamor mi muksa machmat yus. And therefore the Gemara is just using this as a rejection to get to the fact that Rabbi Yehuda explicitly says by muksa machmat isur that it is asur, and therefore you don't even have to extrapolate from muksa machmat mius. What says in? We do find that by Rabbi Yehuda, that's none. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol neirot shel matechet mitaltelim. Any neir that's made out of metal, that you can be mitaltel, because it doesn't become maus. Even if it ages, you can still clean it up, and it doesn't become disgusting. What it implying here is that the braita that we quoted for was speaking about a kli cheres, speaking about an earthenware utensil. So there, if it has yet to be used as a lamp, then it's not disgusting. Once it's used as a lamp, the kli cheres becomes disgusting. That is uniquely associated with cheres, with earthenware. Metallic kelim that are be used as lamps, they don't become disgusting, and therefore there's no din of muksa on them. You can carry them if they are new. You can carry them even if they were used. Chutz min ha'er shedidliku bo to Shabbat. The exception of a utensil in which there was a lamp lit in it coming into Shabbat. There it's muksa, and the assumption is that it's muksa machmat isur, the isur being that there was a ner dolek bo ben ashmashot. Asur lechabot a ner, because it's restricted from extinguishing the flame there. So that's muksa machmat isur. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda does subscribe to muksa machmat isur, and why don't you apply the same thing over here to the animal that is asur mishum eiver min achai? It's not because it's not mukhan. It is mukhan. But it's mufsa midato because it has an isur of Eber min Achai associated with it. V'delma, shiny hotam, davi doche lebi adayim. Wait a minute, maybe it's different between isur that is active and isur that is passive. Here the animal is asur me'eber min Achai, that's a passive isur, he didn't do anything. That's just the status of the animal in its current form. On the other hand, by the ner, when you light it actively on Erev Shabbat, going into Shabbat, that means that you're mekatze b'yadayim. You actively have now put this into the mufsa box because you lit a candle on it and made it asur. So say maybe mufsa applies when you make something asur. Maybe it does not apply when something in itself inherently is asur. And so then you can't extrapolate just because Rabbi Yehuda thinks that a metallic lamp that is lit is muksa, which is muksa machman isur, that then you can extrapolate that and say that the same is true by Eber min Achai, that's muksa machman isur, because the nature of the isur is different. By Eber min Achai, it's an isur that happens by itself, whereas by the candle, it's a muksa that you generated. So it's as if you're mikatze biyadai, you pushed it out intentionally, or in the instance, you were mikatze midatcha. No different than grugurot and simukim that you put up on the roof. You were mekatza them because you have no intent to engage with it because you generated something that now prevents you from interacting with this item. And therefore you can't extrapolate. And we still have yet to get to an answer as to which Rabbi Yehuda we're speaking about. And we'll stop here, three lines from the top of Tet Bavo Menalef, where we'll continue tomorrow with the Gemara that finally reaches which Rabbi Yehuda we're speaking about.